straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first on Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 124, presented by Hook'em.com and our friends at Bud Light. My name's Cedric Golden, and I'm joined by my boy, the Duck, Kirk Bowles. Huge podcast. It's Super Bowl Sunday, but we've got a special, special treat coming up a little later. Texas, former Texas head basketball coach Rick Barnes, now at Tennessee. He dropped a line on your boys.
Yeah, it was nice of him to check in with him and see how the old Hickory's doing.
Hickory's doing very well. 19-1 at Tennessee. We're going to get to that shortly, but first, let's talk about those Texas Longhorns.
Let's do it.
Who did something that Hickory couldn't do this year. They beat the Kansas Jayhawks.
They did beat the Jayhawks.
So Shaka Smart is back. What did that do for Shaka, Kirk?
The world, maybe. It meant the world, or maybe bigger.
Let's keep it real. It wasn't a great Kansas team.
No, it was.
But that's not a great Georgia team that blew them up by 98-88. So any win over Kansas is a big win if I'm living in Austin, bro.
No question about it. You got to tip your hat to the Longhorns for beating Kansas, which was just coming off a road loss to Kentucky in the Big 12 SEC Challenge. And afterward, Bill Self said that was meaningless. In their world, it probably was. But momentum is not meaningless. And now they've lost two straight, and Texas finally got out of that five losses in six games doldrum. It saved their season. We'll see what they can do with it afterward.
Longhorns improved to 12-9 overall, 4-4 in conference play. They're at Iowa State on Saturday. They put themselves in position to compete for a spot in the top half of the conference. At the time of this taping, there are a couple of teams. It's K-State and Baylor, 5-2.
Right.
In conference, Texas is right there.
Yeah.
They're right there.
I've said this all year. I don't know if you agree or not. I don't think there are any super teams in the league. But
it's a
damn even, very competitive league. I mean, West Virginia's having its issues.
And Oklahoma State's bad.
Not very good. Oklahoma State, it was down to 9 players. They had walk-on tryouts a week ago, had 49 people show up, and 6 of them are getting jerseys. I don't know if just to practice. So you can almost dismiss those two. But the other 8 are legitimate NCAA tournament caliber teams, and I think they all have a chance to get there. And that's why this game was so important to Texas. They couldn't risk going to 3-5 before they go to Ames.
And Kansas coach Bill Self said a very important thing after the game. He goes, people are talking about the Kentucky loss. He goes, that didn't mean anything to us.
It didn't mean anything.
He goes, this game was much bigger than Kentucky. It's a league game. We have to compete in our league. And so the fact that Texas gets that win, and you look, and I know you can't be a revisionist historian, but you look back and the loss in Stillwater, brutal.
That hurt. They started out 2-22.
The loss in Athens, brutal.
Yeah. Give up 98 points.
You can't lose to bad teams. I mean, a case could be made that they should be sitting at like 14-7.
They don't always
play
hard.
Which is serviceable.
And that's kind of an indictment of their program.
That's not a coaching staff.
It is.
That's not even. The players do what you tell them to. And if they don't, then you sit them. And I just think I've seen them. I saw them sleepwalk through Stillwater. You always know in the first 4 or 5 minutes of the game if Texas is going to show, if they've shown up. And they just usually haven't had that same vibe on the road that they did against Kansas. I mean, they were ready to play against the Jayhawks.
How do you not be ready to play Jayhawks?
It's on the coaching
They
staff.
Carry the brand. You know, they're the banner waver, won 14 straight titles. I go back to Brent Venables once after an Oklahoma football loss that Mac Brown had, and I asked him at the Cotton Bowl, I said, what's the difference? And Brent said, well, it's all about what you demand of your players.
And then he tried to backtrack later. But you know what? That little piece of honesty from Brent Venables was exactly on point.
No question.
You make them give you what you need. You push them. You coach them hard. You love them even harder. Mac said that. But it's what you ask of him. Shaka's not a screamer.
No.
He's not a chair thrower. I mean, he's not a guy that's going to grab somebody. He's a cerebral cat, and he doesn't coach with fear. And sometimes good guys can win that way, like a Tony Dungy. But by and large, the bullies are the guys that get the dubs.
Usually. But it just seems like when you have that cool personality, your team's going to reflect that, unfortunately. And, you know, you see a Huggins or a Sell. I was watching Kansas-Kentucky on Saturday in Lexington. And during a couple of timeouts, Bill Self and John Calipari both lit into their players, their star players. And, I mean, they went after it. And then Reed Travis, you know, they got a scathing conversation with Calipari. He went back at there, and then he dominated the rest of the game. It's what is acceptable. Losing can never be acceptable if you're going to reach for the highest standards. And Bill Self said it great Tuesday night. He said, when you lose, it should piss you off.
And he was PO'd.
And I never totally get that sense from this Texas basketball team that they're pissed off by losing. Do you?
I could see them being hurt. I've seen them hurt after losses, but there's a big difference between being hurt and being angry. There's a difference. Being angry means you want to go out and do something about it.
Immediately.
Yeah. Charles Omenihu, after losing at Kansas his junior year, that was anger.
Yeah.
I mean, he was ready to kill somebody.
It may have been misplaced because where was that during the game?
It should have been during the game.
Yeah.
But he used that as fuel his senior year and turned in a great senior season. I think these guys, Dylan Osikowski has shown, with the little time he's got left as a college player, he's showing the right sense of desperation, the right sense of urgency to get into a tournament and win. He's playing really well, and even more important than him playing well, Duck, he's playing hard. And you can't coach effort. You either do it or you don't.
Dylan Osikowski is balling, plain and simple. He's balling, and in doing so, he's showing leadership on the floor and playing in a way he really hasn't in the previous year and a half. He's posting up, you know, players. He's got soft hands. He's got that little good baby hook shot, and he got some good post up moves. He needs to stay inside. Don't stray out to the perimeter.
He can't make a three to save his life.
He can't buy a three still, but I'd venture to say he's been playing at an MVP level the last few games. And you go, well, you still lost to Georgia and TCU. I understand
that. But he's still playing well.
But he's still playing well.
He's doing his part.
And, boy, I tip my hat. I'm just like you. I'm all in with Dylan right now, how hard he's playing. Courtney Ramey is fearless, as we know. I think he's coming on. You know, Matt Campbell is still searching. I don't know where his mind is. And even Snoop. His senior year, he did almost everything he could to lose that game last night.
He just
at the end.
He threw the ball away. He committed a foul to
two turnovers.
Committed a foul to stop the clock. Missed the front end
of a 1-1,
and then he made some free throws near the end.
You can't have him play that way.
He's got to be smarter. Matt Coleman's still not a factor.
And Jericho Sims.
I don't know where his head is,
but
he can't finish.
Jace Febres is coming on. He's been clutch. He's hitting big threes like he did Tuesday night to beat Kansas. You can count on him a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Shaka said after the game Tuesday night, he's even better than he shows. And I agree with that. I think once his full-blown confidence kicks in, I think Jace Febres can be a really good player. He's trying to do more than just be a shooter.
He knocked down some humongous shots down the stretch.
And Jackson Hayes playing his butt off. Got some cheap fouls that didn't look deserved to you and me. But
our boss thought it was a foul.
He plays hard. He plays hard. And he's not the best rebounder in the world, but he'll block shots and he'll dunk. It brings energy.
He's got some Jared Allen in him. He does. But he's a better athlete than Jared Allen.
Yeah,
he's a better athlete. He runs better. He jumps higher.
And he's just scratching the surface.
He's scratching the surface. He's very similar to Jared.
Right, a question before we leave him. Is he one and done in your mind?
Yeah, he's gone.
I think so, too.
He's gone. He's Prince eBay with hands.
I saw some mock drafts I was looking this week, and he's anywhere from 8th. I think the Wizards may have the 8th pick right now to the 20th. One draft had the Spurs taking him at 20th. He's Spurs kind of guy.
Oh, yeah, he's a character guy.
They love him. And, he looks like a one and done, which is kind of just goes back to the problem. Shaka can't get any traction. He's constantly keeping his head above water. As you said, he got up for Kansas, which you have to do, but they're 4-4, and they play Iowa State on the road. We'll see. Will they bring the same effort?
Yeah, they will. They will. What's Chaka's record now? Is he 62-58?
I think, yeah, he's three games. He was 50-50, 12, three games over 500.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's three 62-59.
62-59, okay.
It's not good.
No.
It's mediocre.
It's mediocre with zero tournament wins. Yeah. So they will bring the effort in Ames. It's a rugged team they're going to play against, well-coached, and you're picked to win the Big 12, right?
I think Iowa State's going to pull it out. I think it's close because K-State and Baylor are right there knocking on the door, too, and I don't know. It'll be a game's difference, and the question will be how much Kansas improved because, as you and I agree, this is not a typical Kansas team. Even Bill Self, he said, our best passer doesn't have anybody to throw the ball to, and that's Dedrick Lawson, who plays inside. And so he doesn't have any consistent scores. Now, Legero Vick is an outside shooter. He can score.
And he didn't show up till late.
And Ocho, was redshirting 3 weeks ago. What did he score, 24 against mm-hmm. the Horns?
Mm-hmm.
They got some pieces there, just haven't put it together yet, and they lose Doak down low, so they don't have that rim protector.
They're not going to go places this year. This is not the typical Kansas team.
No, it's not.
But they'll be good. Well, I don't know. I don't know about next year. Lawson's probably going to be gone.
Probably.
So who knows? But, yeah, they aren't the typical Kansas team. That 14-year reign of terror may be about to come to an end.
Right. So right now, projecting 18 games, what does Texas finish in the league?
They hope to be 8-10. But I just feel like 7-11. I just don't trust them.
I think they will get to 8-10, possibly even 9-9. They've already played Kansas twice. That helps, And they've got a pretty good home schedule. They got some good teams coming in, like K-State, Baylor, Iowa State, TCU. All those are still coming in. They haven't played Iowa State yet. And, they go to Oklahoma, which is not a great home field advantage. They go to West Virginia, which is, I'm not sure they're mailing it in, but it's not a real good team. They also have to go to Waco and Lubbock. But I think they can get to 8-10. If they do, I think they get in the NCAA tournament.
As a 10 seed.
Probably a 10 seed.
Yeah, because the league's not great this year overall.
Right.
Just competitive.
Right. Just very competitive, very even, and maybe any of about four teams could win this whole thing. I just like to see somebody topple Kansas, because I think it's embarrassing to the rest of the league. They've won the last 14 titles, so somebody step up.
On Second Thought.
Duck, let's take it up another level. We just talked Texas-Kansas hoops. Now let's go to the top of the mountain. He is the head coach of the 19-1 Tennessee Volunteers. Joining us on the line, it's Rick Barnes. Check out our conversation with the former Texas head coach on Second Thought.
So when y'all coming down, Friday for the game or Saturday?
Yeah,
Friday?
No, we'll come down Friday. We'll get near probably around 7 o'clock, so Friday.
Okay,
y'all
great.
Something like that, yeah.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. That's cool. So I didn't get to watch Texas beat Kansas last night, so I didn't get to watch your South Carolina game. So how'd that go? Go pretty good?
It was good. Yeah, Frank, you got
sure.
a great job. And we're just, their guards are kind of where our guards were a couple of years ago. And they got two big guys. They got three guys off the Final Four team. But he's got a good player that's out, too. But, they'd beaten everybody in there. And we jumped on them kind of early. Then they made a push, which you'd expect. And then we went on a 10-2 run and kicked it back up to 10 and were able to close it out at the end. And But it's been good because, you know, everywhere we go, you know, we're averaging big crowds here. You know, we 3 days before Christmas, we had 19,800 for the Wake game, and then 3 days after Christmas, we had 21,000 for Tennessee Tech, and
wow.
we've sold out every since, you know, and but they've been coming, and so, and we've been on the road at some places where there's been some really good crowds, and our guys have handled all that, you know, and they had to, you know, being picked number one is like almost like another game because of all the attention. I mean, the national media has been in here and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we've gotten through that part of it, because last night we just went out and played basketball. Those other games, it was just a lot. I mean, these guys have never been through it, and whether we want to admit it or not, it's different. You know, it is. It's very different, and they've had no one to lead them through it, but they've handled it really probably about as good as anybody could with never having to experience it.
Well, Rick, I've seen a couple of your games, and you guys don't shoot a lot of threes, so you're playing a lot of kind of old school ball. Your guys are taking it to the rack and mid range jump shots and stuff like that. How has that changed for you as a coach? Because I know when you were here, you coached the guys like AJ Abrams and KD and DJ Augustine. Those guys were firing threes up left and right.
Well, what we've always tried to do is, you know, instead of trying to force feed a guy's system, if we couldn't recruit how we wanted to play, we've always tried to mold a system to the players, and that's what we did here. When we got here, you know, we kind of guys that we have, we've gone back to doing stuff that I did honestly 30 years ago. Some stuff that I've done every stop that we've made, and but overall, you know, this team is what you just described. This team, we're very much an inside out team, and That's because that's the kind of players that we have. But we will shoot it. I mean, you know, we can play different ways with this group. You know, we can play three guards. We have to. And we can play big and somewhere in between. But we just always tried to build it based on what we thought our players were good at.
Did you feel like you tweaked your offense by design specifically, you know, in the off season, picking up some Davidson tricks, anything special that you tried to do to tweak the system going into this season, Rick?
No, I think, you know, we got a combination of a lot of different things. Like, you know, I'm running some offense that I learned while I worked for Gary Williams. I'm running some offense I learned when I worked for Wimp Sanderson. And we've used that everywhere we've been. And obviously Bob McKillop and I are great friends and work together. And, you know, we've used some of that. And so we've put it together to really to where we are today. You know, we've tried to just build it around our players, and mm-hmm. once you get your players and you go back, some of the things we're doing right now, these guys couldn't do as freshmen and sophomores. And so they've continued to work hard with the individual improvement, which we've always tried to do, and then the more they can take, the more you can add. And so that's kind of where we've evolved to.
Well, you mentioned the crowds. I mean, Knoxville's just got to be bursting at the seams and going crazy. I mean, it's obvious. You watched you on TV a lot. You know, watched you play Vanderbilt. Boy, that was a tough game. But I don't know, two-part thing. It just seems like you have such a mentally tough team. And then if you could just kind of speak on how bonkers Tennessee fans are going right now.
Well, they are. You know, I mean, I heard a lot. You know, my wife Candy went to school here for a year and graduated from Tennessee. She was here during the Ernie and Bernie era. And I've always had heard about the University of Tennessee fan base. And, you know, and through my career, I'd been offered this job a couple different times.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I'd always heard was how great the volunteer fan base is. And getting here, honestly, my first year here, I realized it probably as much as any time we were playing. We were not very good. We were playing on New Year's Eve at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We were playing Tennessee State, and Rob Lanier tapped me on the knee and said, "What do you think about this crowd?" And it were 16,000+ people in the building on New Year's Eve at 1 o'clock.
Oh,
and
wow.
You know what? And when I think about where we are today,
yeah.
I think back to that because I think, and what I think has happened, that they've enjoyed watching this group of guys grow up, and they appreciated the hard work, because back then we did play hard, but I think they've enjoyed watching Lamonte Turner and Admiral Schofield, Kyle Alexander. You know, Kyle was going to come to Texas with us in red shirt, but once we came here, he came, and we, you know, he's been a starter for 4 years and has improved. But I do think our fans have really connected with this group of guys. I think the style of play, it resonates with them. But our fans have been terrific, not just this year, but really since I've been here.
Rick, I saw some highlights of your win over South Carolina. You guys go to 19-1. You have this tank of a guard named Admiral Schofield, 6'6", 240, just a big old dude who can just do it all, moves great. How would you describe his style of play? There aren't too many guards that size can do what he does.
Well, you know, he can really score at all different levels, you know. He's really worked hard. One, his conditioning has really come a long, long way. And actually, the backstory on Admiral was, you know, his AAU coach was one of my best players at Providence the year we won the Big East Championship. And he actually, Dickie Simpkins, had actually called me a couple weeks before my situation at Texas came to a conclusion, and he told me, he said, look, there's going to be a change at Tennessee. Would you be interested in Admiral Schofield at Texas? And I said, well, obviously, you know, we're going to have a scholarship, and we would be, but he said to me at the time, he said, I understand there are, you know, people there, and the word is that they might want to make a change, and he said, and if they do, you should want to come to Tennessee. And he said, I'm telling you, you should want to do it. This place is ready for it. And so that was my first really contact. And I really had gone to see Admiral play earlier while I was at Texas because of my respect for Dickie. And so when I got here, the first guy I called was Admiral Schofield. And if you ever talked to him on the phone, you'd realize how respectful he is and, you know, the family he comes from. And he came in and thought he was in shape, and he wasn't. But he worked as hard as any player that I've ever coached. He's learned to, he's gone from being what would be considered a high school post bully kind of player to a guy that, believe me, he puts in as much time as anybody. He's a guy that can really shoot it, but he can score inside. He's a mismatch problems for anybody he plays because sometimes we go small with him and Grant Williams on the front line, and that means they cannot double Grant because if they do, Admiral's going to have great looks at it. And when we put him at the on the perimeter, he's matched up oftentimes with guards that they have no way they can guard him. So he has been a problem. And last night, I mean, he really was for South Carolina because he's just a big, strong guy, and he's not afraid to go after it and take big shots, make big shots. But he's worked for it. He really has. He's really put a lot of time into his game.
Well, so he was your first recruit at Tennessee? Admiral, then
he had signed with Tennessee.
Okay,
he had called me telling me if there was a coaching change that he might leave Tennessee.
Okay,
we have an interest, but obviously it turned out that I came to
right
Tennessee and Dickie, and you know, and he wanted to be at Tennessee, and he's become one of their all time favorite players.
Well, tell me a little bit about Grant Williams. He obviously had that huge 43-point game, 23 of 23 from the line. What's his backstory, and is this guy should be maybe National Player of the Year?
Well, Grant was a guy that had always grown up. He grew up in Charlotte. He played on the AU teams with Harry Giles, Chris Paul. He knows all those people. You know, all those people. But a guy that was really heavy, out of shape, and but we started the elite camp our first year here, and he came over, and actually I wasn't at that camp because I had some family issues that I was dealing with, and just really, when I say issues, just being with my family, and
right.
Coaches fell in love with he and John Fulkerson. John's from Kingsport, and those were the two guys that coached. We got to offer these two guys, and I'd really had not seen either one of them play.
Right.
And so when I saw Grant play for the first time, he made one move on the baseline where he spun baseline and took off from like 6-8 feet out and looked like he'd put his elbow above the rim, but he only did it once.
Huh.
My thought process right away was really P.J. Tucker.
Huh.
That's exactly the way P.J. Tucker was. You saw Grant.
Right.
I saw some P.J. Tucker in him. And, you know, P.J. was out of shape when we signed him at Texas, but he got himself in great shape. But the one thing that both of those guys enjoy doing, they like the ball close to the basket and can do something, want to do something with it. And so Grant came a lot like, because what Admiral had gone through, he was way out of shape, body fat was too high. Mm-hmm. And Admiral said, hey, man, this is what you're going to do. And they spent a lot of time on a treadmill and took off a lot of weight. And both of them have really transformed their bodies. And they really are both very competitive. If you watch them practice, you might not think they like each other because they go at each other. They do go at each other, and I think that when two of your best players do that, it really helps everybody else on the team to know that, hey, this it's all about us getting better. It's not about me, and it's what can I do to help this team get better.
Could he be the National Player of the Year?
I don't know about that. I mean,
yeah.
I'll say this, he's as valuable to our team as I would guess that any National Player of the Year is.
Mm-hmm.
But that'll get down to, you know, that'll all become statistics. You look at statistics right now, everybody would throw Zion Williamson up there, and mm-hmm. you look at his numbers, you know, they average about the same amount of points. I think Zion averages a few more rebounds than Grant, has more steals probably. I mean, you look at some of the, because when I'm saying this because I haven't seen Duke that much.
Right.
But it seems like Zion Williams out in the open court a lot where he's either stole the ball or done something to get out for those dunks, but it'll get down. That's what the people end up, like you guys, looking at statistics, and mm-hmm. that's kind of what you go on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what National Player of the Year will come down to.
Well, you come to Texas to play A&M on Saturday. What will that be like? You've got a long relationship with the Aggies. What are you expecting out of that? They've kind of having a down year.
Well, a lot of respect for Billy Kennedy. I've known Billy, and I don't think there's a classier, finer person in basketball than he is. And you go back, you know, he had, right off the bat, losing to Amon Gilder, who, mm-hmm. you know, was a guy coming back. And, again, like I think an experienced coach, you know, he's had to try to reshape his team a little bit because he fought through some injuries. And we expect every time we play that we're going to get the best out of everybody. We saw it at Vanderbilt. And we saw how they played against us.
Oh, yeah.
They played terrific. And then we saw since then they've struggled. And so I think that when you're tagged as a ranked team and whatever it may be, you know, people are going to give you their best shot. And that's what we expect mm-hmm. when we get there.
Well, Rick, I know in 03, your Final Four team got a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. You were number two in both polls in December. You're sitting atop the mountain, the AP poll, number one team in the country. How has that experience from 03, how has that helped you deal with this number one team 15 years later?
You know, honestly, Cedric, it's just staying in the moment and trying to make them understand that. Because, again, I've been through it. You know, I don't read the stuff anymore. I mean, you know, I could go back then and it's probably the same things people are saying today. And I think with the players, though, they do. And as a coach, you know they do. You know they're hearing it from people around them. You know the noise is there. So you do have to address it. And even as much as you address it, they have to live it. And you could tell, and it's almost it drains you almost like it's another game that week. And we've had three games in 6 days, along with being ranked number one. And it's draining. It really is. But I thought last night was the first time it was all behind us in terms of we are where we are, but we know that we've got to get back to playing the standard of basketball that we had been playing. And I actually asked the team where I went back and talked about that team a little bit and the question, same thing, have we played our best basketball or is our best basketball in front of us?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's in front of us, we've got to get better.
Mm-hmm.
We have got to get better. And we hadn't put two halves together in a long time where we really played really good basketball both halves, and last night was the first time we did that. And but you go through that as a team, and you do, you have to deal with it, and you're going to have your ups and downs. But the fact is, we've got our next game, it'll be February, and it's been a grind from the beginning because we've played a great non-league schedule and been in some great games. And now it's about staying focused and keeping. We got to get our bodies right. Like last night, Jordan Bowden, right before the tip, I didn't even know he was having a problem, and his knee started hurting him while he was warming up before the game, and he just didn't feel like he could go. And then we had a couple guys that really hadn't played that much, Derek Walker and Jalen Johnson, who they practiced, and that kind of. It really epitomizes our team. Guys can go a game or two of not playing, but when we called on them last night, they were ready to play. And And the only concern I have right now is that we've got some guys that have logged a lot of minutes. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have to really manage that because Lamonte Turner, who's a big part of what we did a year ago, you know, missed the entire month of December after the Kansas game. And he started playing our first conference game, and he's starting to round back into shape. But those minutes that we didn't have him early, Grant mm-hmm. Williams and Admiral Schofield went from 28 minute average up around 31 or 32, and we've got to try to get that back down a little bit if we can. Mm-hmm.
Maybe you lost to Kansas at overtime in December. I wonder if that could even be a good thing, because if y'all were undefeated right now, that would even ratchet up even more attention. Can this the perfect team? Can you go undefeated the entire season? Could that be a blessing a little bit, Rick?
Well, Kurt, again, I'll tell you this. That game was already a blessing in the fact that for a team that had been through some big moments, you know, we had won a couple games earlier. We were a very emotional team against Kansas, and we looked like a real young team. Mm-hmm. And I think we learned from that because we hadn't been that emotional in almost a year. Because, you know, last year, starting this time a year ago, you know, we went to South Carolina a year ago. We were 3-3. And we left there with a big win, and we only lost two more games the rest of the way.
Mm-hmm.
But we had been the highest-ranked team in the SEC from that point on, so we were in big games. People were coming after us.
Right.
But for whatever reason, we go into the Kansas game, we were really overly hyped, and we did some things that were way out of character for us.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that helped us. I mean, there's some games over the last 2 years that I could draw on, you know, the Purdue game, you know, the loss to Villanova. But the Kansas loss has already helped us in the fact that, and we were just too emotional. And so,
right.
But yeah, you know, you look at our schedule right now, you can't feel comfortable with any game. You're looking down the barrel at 2, 3, 4 losses if you're not ready to play.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think that's true of anybody in college basketball. I mean, there's so much parity out there. And when you get into league play, and there's so many things that can happen. And so if you don't stay focused on what's right at hand, you know, you're gonna drop some, and if you drop some, you let it snowball, and you, Lord knows where it leads you.
Well, you've had a great 4 years there in Knoxville. Do you feel recharged since you left Texas, and you're building, you know, such a powerhouse there, and obviously such appreciative fans?
I never felt uncharged.
Yeah,
so, you know, I think you guys wrote that. I don't know where all that came from. I can't tell you that. I don't think anybody knows. Anybody, unless they're living with them every day, but I don't know where all that comes from. But do I feel any different than I did 4 years ago? I really don't. And I'm appreciative to the University of Texas. I mean, some of my fondest memories, and I love that place. I love my friends there, and I'm blessed to have had the time that I was there. And obviously, I would have loved to finish my career there. But mm-hmm. then, on the other hand, I can't tell you how happy I am being here and being involved in this city, this community, and the friends that I've met here, and it's been great. And that goes back, I think, God has a plan for all of us,
mm-hmm.
and He had a plan that I didn't know about. And you know, when we started here 4 years ago, it was the same blueprint that we started out. Everywhere we've been, I've had great assistant coaches with me, and they deserve as much. But where we are today, our players deserve the credit for it. But I've never not. I mean, I never mm-hmm. feel uncharged, and
mm-hmm.
I'm thankful that God gave me this opportunity.
Well, you don't need a national championship to cement your reputation as a great coach, and you're the greatest here at Texas and created such high standards. But what would a national championship mean? I know we're looking a long way down the road, a couple more months of the season, but
well, you know, Kurt, everybody wants to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. And you know, I mean, I think my players would be disappointed if I didn't say that was the ultimate goal. And mm-hmm. It always has been. And to get in, but there's so many things that have to fall in place for that to happen. But the fact is, you got to get there first. You got to be in that tournament. And then, you know, you guys covered, there's mm-hmm. a lot of things, matchups, this, that, or whatever. But the fact is, yeah, I mean, again, that's what we play for. There's mm-hmm. no doubt about it. That's what we play for, and you want to have it. And but now, I will say this too. As I've gotten older, I mean, it's amazing the relationships I have with so many of my players that I've reconnected. I've always at George Mason, Providence, Clemson, Texas. Now that they're older guys, they're family men. They're married, and in here, I want these guys to embrace this moment, because, you know, it's hard for them to think about being older and being one of those guys. But I want them to embrace it. You know, I want them to want more than basketball. I want them to leave here balanced. I want them to, you know, honestly, to have it all. But that's an everyday process. You got to go one day at a time. There's no doubt that's our goal. We want to be. There's a lot of winners. The bottom line is you want to be the last winner when it's all said and done.
Well, you know, you're a winner. You're a winner in our book, and
I appreciate that.
We love you and love our relationship with you, and it was fantastic times here, and wish you nothing but the best against the Aggies. And we'll
see you down the line in the tournament, sir.
That's right. That's right. Best of luck to you.
I appreciate you guys. It's great to hear y'all's voices, and I look forward to seeing you.
Okay. Take care, Rick. Thanks
Take
for
care,
calling.
Rick.
Take care.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right.
On Second Thought.
New England Patriots, Los Angeles Rams, Sunday, Super Bowl day.
Sexy, huh?
It's a wonderful day in America. I'm not as excited as I thought I'd be in the middle of the week.
It's not sexy. L.A.
It's okay,
Sean
dog.
McVay, New England, the GOAT.
Tired of the GOAT.
Why aren't you excited?
It's an old GOAT, too.
Yeah.
I'm
got
tired
your goat.
Of the GOAT.
You tired of him getting your GOAT.
I'm tired of smug Tom Brady and smug Belichick.
I don't know. How smug is he?
They're very smug. They're very smug. They know they've gotten away with stuff in the past, and they're able to win.
What have they gotten away with?
Recording practices, messing with balls, inflatable balls.
Do you really think there was anything to do with that?
Yeah, I do.
They killed Indianapolis like 40 points.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
They were stealing signals from the Jets. Who cares? Doesn't everybody in baseball, if you ain't stealing something, you ain't trying.
This ain't baseball. This is football.
What? You know, if I'm playing
baseball,
you,
it'll let you.
I'm trying to steal your signs. What's wrong with that?
I don't. But if you're recording, you're illegally recording practices.
You know what? You're one of those haters. And
is that what I am? A hater?
Rob Gronkowski.
You sound like a Bowles. That's what you sound like.
I just appreciate excellence.
I know John Tyler listens, and maybe the pig, and maybe Ryan.
They love.
I don't
love
like the Patriots,
Pats.
And they know it. I came at, and John Tyler can't say anything to me because I won the fantasy league this year, and I've kept that off the podcast.
And I've had Brady.
I've won the podcast. I won the fantasy league, and y'all had Tom Brady as your quarterback.
And you had a Ram, Todd Gurley.
I had a Ram, Todd Gurley.
Made all the difference.
Not playing very well right now.
Who is Todd Gurley? Who is this?
He turned into an enigma.
What is happening?
He's let a fat guy take his job.
A real fat guy.
C.J. Anderson. I mean, he's carrying an extra load.
Well, what do you make? He got, what, five touches against the Saints, and they still win?
Five touches, one touchdown, 10 yards rushing.
He got five touches, and the refs got no touch on the biggest play.
Exactly.
So that was big. But what do you really make of the Gurley thing? He says he's not hurt.
People think it's a knee injury. He insists it's not.
Then I think it's a head issue.
His
head was not in the game, was it?
Yeah, it was not. He dropped two passes. One of them was picked.
Right.
He missed on two blitzes.
Yes.
Got Goff killed. And they took him out and put in C.J. Anderson, who was ready to play football.
Do you blame McVay for taking him out?
No.
I don't either.
You're trying to win a football game.
I don't either.
Do you want to appease your superstar, or do you want to play for a Super Bowl?
I don't know. It's almost like
I don't know that they win that game with Todd Gurley playing the way
he played.
I don't
either. It's almost like Leonard Fournette infiltrated Todd Gurley's body. All right, here's the question. Todd Gurley gets five touches, four carries. Can the Rams beat the Patriots?
This is they get blown out if Gurley doesn't play well.
I think you're right. I think you're right.
Belichick's going to try to take away Gurley.
He always takes away
the best weapon. He took away Tyreek Hill in the playoff
game. Yes, he did.
So he's going to take away Gurley anyway.
But you know what? Maybe he doesn't have to. Maybe Gurley takes away Gurley.
No, Gurley.
And he takes away Brandon Cooks.
But Gurley 2 weeks later is going to be ready to play football.
Now, you don't know that.
Yeah, I do. He was on my fantasy league team. He won me the championship, sir.
Yeah.
He's a stud horse.
Does he look good in the playoffs?
He's had one bad game. He looked okay the game before.
Yeah.
But yeah, Todd Gurley's going
to
show up. This is the biggest game of his life.
They can't
win a Super Bowl with him over on the sidelines.
I didn't think they could win a game in New Orleans with him on the sidelines.
They didn't,
but
the refs
did.
Gave it to him.
I love it when Sean McVay was asked about the non-call. He said, you know, yeah, it was unfortunate. I mean, it could have altered the game.
Whatever, Sean.
Did you think it could have?
Whatever.
Does Drew Brees ever get over that?
Oh, I know. Alvin Gentry, I think the Pelicans coach, was asked about Anthony Davis, and he goes, the chances of me answering that question are about as good as the Saints being in the Super Bowl, where they should be. And he's right. I think that the Patriots are better.
They are.
And I'm going to tell you why. Julian Edelman looks great.
He's a guy you got to take away if
he
you're the Rams.
He looks great. Gronk turned the clock back 5 years. I don't know if you'll see that Gronk in the Super Bowl, but he sure looked good.
Maybe his last game.
And Sony Michel has been
their
best player.
Go.
Has been their best player in these playoffs.
This is the different type of Patriots team. They run the ball, which means Tom Brady doesn't have to be Tom Brady every week.
He doesn't.
You know, and that saved wear and tear on Brady. And their running game, I've never seen it quite like. I mean, MVP could be the New England offensive line. He hadn't been sacked in the playoffs. Two games, hadn't been sacked.
You don't hit Brady, you don't win.
You don't win.
So Aaron Donald is going to have to get after Tom Brady. Yeah.
So Sony Michel and James White may be bigger than Todd Gurley.
And don't forget Rex Burkhead on third
Rex
down.
Rex Burkhead, he had a great playoff.
So they have weapons.
Yeah.
It's hard to pick against the Patriots when they're this close.
But the Lions really small, isn't it?
It's like two and a half.
2.5. What would you do if you had to gamble? I'd give you $1,000. How would you bet it?
I would load up on the Patriots to win the game.
I would too.
Just load up on it. Bet
about
the spread.
The over-under is 56. Which of those would you take?
I think I would take the under.
I think I would too.
I think this feels like a Patriots 31-21 type game.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like the back and forth great game. You know, Jared Goff's going to be an interesting person. You know, first Super Bowl, you know, young, you know, not a rookie, but not too far away from his rookie year. How's he going to react? You know, can he make the throws in the tight windows? So
against the Patriots secondary, that can be had.
Yes, it can.
Let me ask you this. What player that's under the radar you think could be huge in this game? Not a Gronk, not a Gurley, not a Goff.
Okay, I'll say Chris Hogan.
Wow, that guy, he hasn't done much lately.
Yeah, he's had a 0 year. He hadn't been much. But if you're thinking, okay, if you're the Rams, well, we got to double or at least have that safety near the area over the top against Julian and, you know, not single double cover Gronk because you can't double cover everybody.
Mm-mm.
Chris Hogan could slip around there. And the other one is James White. You know, you saw it against the Falcons how good he was.
He had a 13-catch game.
He was everything. He did everything for them. So, you know, they've got a lot of weapons, and they seem healthy. Tom Brady saying he's going to play till he's 45. Can you see him playing till he's 45?
Sure. Why not?
Yeah.
He probably has the body of a 36-year-old man.
Yeah, there's probably
takes
nobody
care of
that
himself.
Takes care of himself like he does.
Yeah, he's got the TB plan.
Yeah.
And sure.
What does that tell you? He wants to play till he's 45. Drew Brees,
40.
That was Drew, 40. Phillip Rivers, 37.
Mm-hmm.
Big Ben, 36. We've never seen anything like this. Now, they're going to benefit from the rules protecting the quarterback.
Of course.
What else? Why are we seeing these quarterbacks so late in their careers still playing?
Well, because of the nutrition. Guys show up to camp in shape.
Right.
Now, they don't work their way into shape. They don't show up fat.
Money's better.
They take care of themselves year-round. They get the nutrition, training, all of that.
Right.
All of that. It's a great era of quarterbacks, but it's not the golden era, dog. I know you tried to bring that up earlier.
Well, it may not be the golden era, but let me ask you this. Tom Brady, Hall of Fame?
Yes.
Drew Brees, Hall of Fame?
Of course.
Big Ben, Hall of Fame?
Of course.
Phillip Rivers, Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Man, that's pretty damn good.
It's
okay.
Good.
Pat Mahomes, how good is he?
Oh, he's not in this era.
No, but he's just starting.
I'm
just saying, look at the blend of these old established quarterbacks in the twilight. They're still killing it, mm-hmm. doing well. And then you have guys like Mahomes and mm-hmm. Carson Wentz and Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield.
I'm not sold on Carson Wentz. He can't stay healthy. Baker's off to a good start. Deshaun Watson's
really
off to a good start. But the rules in today's game, as opposed to the real great era of quarterbacking, the 1984 draft of Jim Kelly, Dan Marino, John Elway, those guys.
You know who we didn't even mention? Another Hall of Famer?
Hmm.
Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers,
He's still playing.
He's 36.
This may be the golden era for quarterbacks with it as a group.
It is.
Because
it,
you just mentioned about five of the young ones. That you give me any of those five, and then there's Lamar Jackson. You know, a lot of people like him. Then there's in between, like Matt like Ryan and Matt Stafford.
Like Lamar, I don't like Lamar Jackson.
No, I'm not either as a franchise
guy. I think
guy.
They're trying to.
He runs too much.
I think they're trying to pigeonhole him into something that he may not be.
And there's Russell Wilson. There's some damn good quarterbacks.
But it's also the best era to be a quarterback.
Yeah, it absolutely
is. You can't touch him.
Right.
You can't breathe on him.
Yeah.
And their receivers are protected.
Yeah.
You can't, I mean.
Right.
Cornerbacks in the mid-80s could do what they wanted. This is before illegal contact.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
I like that personal foul that KC was called on for Brady. Somebody put a finger on him.
Oh, yeah. Chris Jones didn't even touch him. Just come on. That's stupid.
Speaking of that, the competition committee is going to weigh, you know, judgment calls being able to be challenged. You good with that?
I love it. We've been talking about it. I don't know how you legislate it, but I love it because it gives coaches a chance to write just horrifically bad game-changing type calls.
I think it's easy to rectify. Before, you couldn't challenge a judgment call, but now they would have challenged that and won, and the Saints would probably be in the Super Bowl.
You could still have your regular challenges. I would just say maybe in the second and fourth quarters, you know, where halves matter.
Uh-huh, sure they do.
First and third quarter, if they want to make it for a full game, I'm fine with that too. But in the interest of time, if they want to just make it in the second quarter and the fourth quarter, I'm good with that too.
Or maybe, what is it, two challenges, three if you get the first two right?
Yeah.
What if they just did that and said, okay, you have one special challenge, 2 minutes, you know, and under for any judgment calls.
I wouldn't even go 2 minutes and under because if you're in the middle of a drive and there's 4 minutes to go in the game.
Well, then make it four. Make it 5 minutes.
No, I just say for the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I mean, those are game-changing.
And why shouldn't they be challengeable?
I don't know. It's an old-school league, and they don't like change very well. With the technology available to them now, with all the different camera angles they have at their disposal, there's no reason. Take human error out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's still going to be a human game, but try to take as much of the human error out of it.
Right.
That New Orleans call, that would have been reviewed. It would have taken them 10 seconds.
Yeah, you would think.
They would have been like, oh, my God, that's obvious. I don't know how our guys missed that. First down New Orleans, game over, basically.
Should have been. Absolutely. So here's the other thing. They got to fix overtime.
They have to fix overtime.
You got to give both teams a chance. Which, can you imagine overtime in the NBA when, well, you don't get the ball. Just one team gets the ball.
Move it back. You can take the kickoff away because you already have.
Take it away.
Move it back to the 50.
Right.
Don't be like college. Don't start them out.
I agree.
Move it back to the 50.
So you like the college version.
I like it, but I wish the college version was more midfield.
I agree. At least the 40.
Move it back out of field goal range.
Right.
Give them, and let both teams touch the ball once, and you have to go for two.
Yeah, I would say go for two,
especially
after every series.
College should have to go for two
immediately.
Yeah, because those games are just too long.
What's sacred about the third series?
Nothing.
Make it immediate.
I don't know.
Do you think they'd be more likely to say, okay, both teams get a chance at the ball? Or I would think they'd be more likely to adopt that than any version of the college format, where they're starting it at the 50.
Yeah, but the kickoff has become a colossal waste of time.
Yeah, it's hard to abolish is just the onside kick. If you're close,
they've killed it too.
You know,
they've killed that too. They don't allow you to have all 10 guys on one side of the ball.
Right.
The onside kick, I think it had like a 21% success rate this year.
Maybe they would say no onside kicks until the last 5 minutes of a game or something.
I don't know.
That's about the only time anybody uses it.
Onside kicks don't work anymore.
But you want to give teams a chance to win.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, if you're down by, nine and you score, you want to at least have the chance. So maybe have onside kick at the end.
Before we wrap this thing up, Tommy Nobis died. Did you read the piece?
Yeah, it was a phenomenal piece. The family.
The CTE. He had the worst case.
The most severe form of CTE for Tommy Nobis. Maybe the greatest Longhorn ever. And it was such a traumatic story to read. You know, the way his family tried to walk on eggshells around him. He had fits of rage. He would, you know, berate people. He'd ban from restaurants. And
berated his grandson.
A two-year-old grandson. Which created a wedge in the family.
And they threatened to call the cops on him.
And said he didn't see his grandchildren for a long time. It's just sad. And so
We love the game. But people that play it, a lot of these guys pay a horrific price.
And
for playing
youth
it.
Participation football's down. It is declining.
I don't have children.
I'm not surprised.
I wouldn't have if I had children. I wouldn't allow them. I just wouldn't.
Well, I would allow them. I would put everything in front of them, you know, to let them make their own decision. But I don't think I'd want them to play football. The risk is just too great.
It's just too great. The brain is not built for it. We have a lot of friends that play the game that are doing great. Yep. Guys that play for many years that are fine, but we don't, you know, there are also guys that haven't come into that age in the 50s and 60s when this seems to show up. You got Tony Dorsett says sometimes he leaves the house and he has no idea where he's going. And he looks like $1 million, but his brain's not right.
I'm not sure I understand why anybody, you know, keeps playing into their 40s, like, you know, we're seeing Tom Brady and Drew
Quarterbacks
Brees.
Don't get hit as much as these are. It's the offensive lineman.
But it may take one hit. You don't know which is the hit.
But it's it's the offensive lineman that have it worse
than
anybody.
I just think the risk is just too great.
It is. And I pray for guys that are going through it.
And their families.
Couple of friends that have been affected by this game that played it.
Yeah,
played it at
a
high level. And you want them to be healthy, but you know, when you're watching the game, you don't think about that. It's a very physical game. They're highly compensated for what they do, but at the end, a price is going to be paid.
And it's a short shelf life for an NFL player. They don't have long careers by and large, so it's an individual thing. And I think the league is trying to do everything it can, which it has to, because it was dragging its heels into this century on this issue, you know, and they were in denial for a long, long time, and they've got to do more to help those that have suffered through CTE and their families as well.
But it's going to be a good game. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I'm glad.
Who you picking?
You up a little
Who
bit.
You picking, dog?
I'm not picking against the Patriots. And
oh,
the
come
goat.
On.
No,
don't,
I
don't
think they
homer.
Win by at least a touchdown.
I do, too. Yeah. I'm going to go Patriots 34. Patriots 31, Rams 20.
All right, I'll say 35-24.
Oh, so you are taking the over.
Yeah, I guess I am.
Oh, wow. I got to call your bookie.
I don't think either one of these have a great defense.
They don't.
You know, so, but I think Goff is going to be the big key. How does he step up? Does he have a case of the nerves? Or does he have a little Nick Foles magic?
Well, tune in next week and we will be reviewing the Super Bowl that was.
On Second Thought.
That will do it for episode 124 of On Second Thought. Special thanks to former Texas head coach Rick Barnes, now at Tennessee, and our producer Adam Fish. For the Duck, Kirk Bowles, I'm Cedric Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.